Welcome to Ever Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are. And it's the 3rd of April, 2016. Oh, 3, 4, 16. Anyway, long, whatever. It's quite a day. We've had Simon Parks, we've had Solaris, and now tonight another hard hitter, grinding against the rock face of lies and illusions, peeling back the surface of what's really going on behind our psychic world of the Matrix, and here dealing with the almost unimaginable Eve Logan. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It really is. On lots of levels. It's interesting. I don't get much chance to read stuff. But what I really do like to do is to connect with authors, so that I can see the world from their point of view. And that enables me to, it gives me another facet on my universe. So it's fascinating because, you know, everybody does have their own unique perspective on how things work, how they're put together. And, you know, everybody can be true. Everybody can be correct. I've heard Kerry Cassidy and lots of people say, you know, the lie is different at every level. The truth is different at every level. When you start stepping outside of the world and seeing the energies and forces that are playing on the world from these, what people call other races or other dimensions, the situation doesn't look very different down here than it does up there. It's like there's still a mafia going on. You know, there's still corruption and stuff going on in the universe. It just seems to go on. As a place to start, what's going on for you, Eve? let's start there, because that's the only place we can start. In your vortex, what is spinning around you as we speak?
Yeah, there's actually a lot going on, and I usually talk about my books, which I've written, and I've done that before on another show, probably over a year ago with you. And I continue to do basically consulting, counseling with people who've had anomalous experiences, really revolving around either some kind of targeting, my lab experience, or what I call a love bite or dark side of Cupid, love relationship that's being interfered with in some way. And so I've come across a lot of that lately and actually learning how to refine what's really happening. And I think people have different perspectives of what's going on, usually based on their own experience and also what they've read really in the media or in their own research. So I'm finding it pretty amazing that, and one of the things that I find as a counselor, I guess, as someone who's done my own research and the counseling healing modality, is that many people who have had anomalous experiences, which say, let's say with the love bite, for example, or the alien love bite, or even a twin, they think they're in a twin flame relationship, but they feel it's being interfered with by these unseen forces from other dimensions. What I'm finding is that many of them may have previous histories, which they may not have taken into consideration that they feel is relevant to their situation. but I'm finding that previous traumas and histories of, let's say, abductions or visitations by ETs, or being of a bloodline family lineage where there's some kind of royalty connection or connection with certain interdimensional beings, is relevant to their experience. And so I find it's also relevant to people who are coming to me saying, oh, I'm a targeted individual. It's like the hot buzzword of the decade, really, that, oh, I'm a targeted individual. What's a TI? And really, so I posted a video that Solaris Blue Raven did with Dr. John Hall over a year ago. And I took notes on that that radio show, because it was very good. Dr. John Hall and Solaris Blue Raven really talked about the different targeting technologies that they both are aware of from their own research and experience, which really is what people are reporting, like the voice-to-skull telepathic things and their consciousness being hacked, or they feel like they're being beamed with some kind of frequency that causes them to feel any number of things. Could be extreme anxiety, insomnia, headaches, physical health problems, extreme exhaustion, and that kind of thing. So I just felt the need to repost that interview with some bullet points, and also the relevance that this is having with people who've had the alien love bite experience. And that there's also the phenomena of what Dr. John Hall picked up. And he said that with a lot of these TI experiencers and victims, I think there's two main categories, maybe three. And one of them are what he calls basically the guinea pigs, who are those who may be just chosen just simply because they're guinea pigs, some kind of opportunistic experimentee on these technologies. And then he says there are others who appear to fall into the category of previous victimization, although he didn't specify what that was, although he did mention, for example, there was a population he was working with who had the Morgellons syndrome. And so what I'm finding is that a lot of the people who are coming to me, they have had a previous history of trauma that they may actually be involved in some kind of hidden MKUltra or ritual abuse, cult abuse, or a hidden alien abduction history, but they're really not aware fully of it or know the relevance and the connection to being a targeted individual, because I believe there is a connection. So I could pause right there for a minute, or I can just keep going.
No, that's a very interesting place to pause, because as you're illustrating, it's not as random and therefore not as scary, perhaps, as it seems to have been. Like you're saying, there are bloodline connections. You say past connections. Are you saying past lives as well?
Yes, in fact.
Are we also saying that perhaps those people who are being taken or abducted these days were part of the people who agreed to it in the first place when it first started happening? Or have you get do you get my drift on that one? How
absolutely.
What's the deal?
Yes.
What happened? Well, how did they do that? How did that happen?
Into many tangents here, but I believe that the previous victimization, as in, let's say they have a hidden history of making outright abductions by aliens, or the military abduction, MKUltra super soldier thing, or perhaps some kind of cult abuse or satanic ritual abuse, or they can be in a bloodline where, let's say, there are blood oaths and pacts being made by either, let's say, a family member in a high-level occult organization. I don't have to mention them. I think we pretty much know what they are. Or ancestors who had made binding oaths and agreements or blood sacrifice. And so when they are in these bloodlines, sometimes maybe their parents are not fully aware or are consciously participating in some kind of cult or military-industrial complex involvement. But just because of their bloodline and the ancestral connection, they may be plucked and chosen through what I call the born rights issue, so that these beings that are already in the bloodlines have basically taken some kind of ownership to be able to utilize these downline into whatever they fall into. And so sometimes, depending on the person's self-exploration and, let's say, the healing and the therapy that they're doing, sometimes they discover that there's a previous life connection where they made some kind of an agreement. But really, I don't want to say that happens in every case, because it's based on what they really discover for themselves through realization. but that does occur. And certainly that has occurred in certain healing modalities, like quantum healing modalities, where we're doing trauma resolution and we're taking the guidance of the spirit of the person to take us back to the origin point of a particular issue. Let's say, why am I being abducted by aliens? And then your spirit will take you back to several incidences in maybe your current life or another incarnation, or an ancestor did something. And then we find the origin point of this entrance into the reality of some kind of interdimensional being that is utilizing them in some way, usually in a nefarious way where they're parasiting them or trying to manipulate and control them some way. So we have found that out, but I know that you mentioned, I don't know if you stated it specifically, something about, are there past life connections with people who are being born into programs? And I think this is what has come up in some of the MILABs, or the MILAB abductees who know they're in a program, right? And they realize that they have past life memories of having been in Nazi Germany, for example. So I have come across that actually several times. So there might be something to that.
Well, you know, there's got to be some. Here's one of my theories. You know, people sell their souls to the devil. You know, in these weird pacts. Now, whether you believe it or not, somehow they're making some kind of agreement with something that perhaps we're talking extraterrestrials, and that they've. Basically, by selling, you know, quote, selling your soul to the devil, you've agreed to be abducted or whatever that might be, or something like that. Anyone?
I think in some cases that's true, although in many of the cases people are not aware that they've made what I call it the agreement of entrapment, because oftentimes the person doesn't realize that an agreement has actually been made for this, or they were tricked into something, or sometimes it was just through trauma. And in the trauma, they, you know, left their body, they dissociated, and they, maybe the part of them, there was a being standing around saying, well, I'll be your protector. And so at that trauma, they decided to make a pact with somebody that claimed that they would be their protector. And it turns out to be, you know, an interdimensional being that has other, you know, agendas. Instead of protecting, maybe they have another agenda. So that kind of thing happens.
Yeah, so that's the, and I think one, you know, there is a thing about protection going on, you know, with this part of the discussion tonight. And that the idea of protection involves you being in the idea of conflict.
Yes.
And attack and defense and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And, I think the idea of where we're at right now is to evolve out of that. That's my personal feeling. Is, yeah. You know, you're in the war, well, step out of it. And that's what the war's for, is to make us run away in the best possible way to the place where we really, what we, you know, the war is what we don't want. We know what we don't want. The opposite is what we do want. So
yeah.
It's maybe forcing us to look at it that way.
But it seems to me that trauma in and of itself can cause us to, let's say, dissociate and split off our minds or jump out of our body because of the shock of the experience. Mm. And then when that happens, we become vulnerable to interdimensional interference, and other entities are ready to jump in when you release your vehicle through some, there's entities always wanting to come in. That's part of this whole dimensional reality, is that there appears to be a lot of beings who would like to take possession of human bodies or interfere in some way. So that actually tends to happen. So it's as if this is a strategy of warfare on the human race to create as much conflict and trauma that would cause them to leave their bodies or dissociate or be in fear, to be vulnerable, right? Or to call on these beings who are ready to come to our aid in problem reaction solution method, right? Just like how David Icke explains that. And so then we make these pacts with these beings who'd protect us, be our, you know, lords of protection, and then they're really the ones who created the problem in the first place, like the good cop, bad cop situation. So I think a little bit of that's going on, you know?
Exactly. Creating the illusion of war by creating an illusionary enemy who is actually part of you. You know, that's what they do with cancer, actually. I just thought that, you know, cancer, the enemy within, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, the whole shadow thing, the Jungian idea, an archetype of our shadow, mm-hmm. I believe it has great relevance in healing in terms of we need to face our own shadow in terms of how to deal with our own issues to come to a place of sovereignty and empowerment. But I think there's a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings on, well, what exactly is our shadow? What is really ours versus what is not ours? And this is something that I come into contact with in healing and counseling, where what I consider the shadow is what I call the unresolved issues and traumas that we have, that where we're repressing some kind of emotional energy. And perhaps along with that, we may be holding a false belief as a result of, let's say, this traumatic experience at some point in our life or other lives. And so when that is in place, that creates like a bubble of patterns of negativity, or to create crap in your life that you don't want. But when you have that, that's unresolved, that acts as a glue for interdimensional beings who exist actually outside of us, and they're other beings. They're not who we are individually. Then they can link into us. And then what happens is people confuse their own shadow with, let's say, an attached entity. And so you don't want to embrace the attached entity, because the attached entity is not truly you. Because what we're finding, I mean, in my work over and over again, people come to me because they believe they have some kind of possession situation going on, or they have a lover who has an attached entity that keeps astrally raping them or coming to them and creating this unhealthy dynamic. So to heal the shadow, we heal the wounds of our own personal traumas, and then that releases the glue that helps these attached entities link into us. So once we clear those traumas, a lot of times those entities leave because they don't have anything else to hold on to. But sometimes you need to do an extra release kind of session to get rid of these beings through some kind of agreement of entrapment that was made. So I don't believe in embracing the shadow when the shadow is really not who you are. So sometimes people take over responsibility for things that are not theirs. So that's the only reason why I'm saying that, is because I see that with some people who are the over-responsible types. Let's say the people who were born and raised in alcoholic homes, where they had to be the parent for the parents and the parent for all their brothers and sisters, and they're super responsible, and they take too much responsibility. So sometimes that happens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, and this is what I've been finding in my work when counseling people as well, is that, and in, you know, indeed in myself, this is how I'm learning about the whole thing. It's like, you know, I figure out how it works in me. Ah, right. And then then it just seems to present itself, and I have the right attitude to deal with it. Having dealt with it myself, I get my own kind of angle on dealing with the situation. But very much like you're saying, the reason that you're getting these entities is because you have like a lock that they have the keys to. It's like open source keys. And the place is teeming. The place is teeming with opportunistic little, you know, mosquitoes, gnats, ticks, you know.
It's like we live in a whole environment of parasites.
Yeah, very parasitic.
It's just amazing, really, when you realize, like, energetically, it actually is similar to what happens in the physical world, where if we're not in balance in with our life, that we can get parasites in our system, and then the parasites in our system can leave us open to astral parasites. So actually, they're very similar dynamic that happens.
Well, yeah, and the other part of my life work has been dealing with, everybody's going to roll their eyes now, is dealing with the candida overgrowth problem. How it's worked in my life, you know, because Karen McDonald introduced everybody, or recently introduced the big sweep of using borax in very small quantities to deal with the candida overgrowth. And I tell you, over months, I used to be very fat. I'm not very fat anymore.
Oh, wow.
I've now got, I'm actually gaining a physique, And it's all because this thing kills the candida, which creates the cravings that make you fat.
Oh, borax, huh? They used to put that in laundry detergent, right?
Exactly, exactly. It's humble borax. 20 mules, was it 200 mules, 100 mules? Something in America. It's like, it's mined in California. It's a natural mineral. And it's very alkaline. It's a basic alkaline, but it also contains boron, which helps your bones. So it's good for your bones as well as the candida. And I feel fantastic. It's really, the mold takes over your body and your soul can't penetrate to there. It's like an alien parasite.
Well, it is. I mean, I think that there's some kind of a bridge that goes from these parasites that are in the physical to the interdimensional realm. It's as if, like, if our body are unbalanced, then we can create a bridge just because these parasites are in us to attach to the energetic level of parasitism. Mm. So I think there's something to that for
20,
sure.
20 mule team borax. Thank you, Vanessa. Here's the next thought, right? First of all, what happens when you leave a sandwich for 2 weeks? It starts getting hairy, you know. That's what happens in your body, and it comes through yeast. And yeast came through Egypt, and it was supposed to be, you know, bread and beer was what Ra gave everybody, or Ray.
And that changes your behavior too,
doesn't it?
And
I believe that it's the it's a weaponized bio nanotechnology that has been running for several thousand years.
That's actually something that was in a book. Oh, I'm trying to remember the name of the author, but it was called Eve's Ill, and he talked about how the yeast and from the beer and the bread and actually created the changes that caused behavioral changes in the people and weakness, spiritual weakness. And it was a deliberate thing being done to weaken us.
Interesting. What was it called? Eve's Ill.
Yeah. And I have it in the other room, so I don't want to leave the room, but, it was a good book because it talked about, you know, the origin of a lot of the biblical things and trying to trace all the bloodlines back. And, but I remember he did talk about that along with vaccines and some of the other things that are being done to weaken us and make us vulnerable. I mean, if you wanted to look at it from a simplistic view, there is a war on the human soul and on humanity itself and on different bloodlines of humanity. And a lot of, you know, the abduction phenomena, the MK Ultra, and people in the super soldier projects, they are chosen for one reason or another. That might be based on their genetics or the ancestral line because they have something of desire by these people who want to use them as operatives. But it's a type of enslavement. I mean, most of it is MKUltra, and MKUltra usually, I mean, in many of the cases in my views have some kind of trauma-based mind control origin. Oftentimes it's satanic ritual abuse, but not always, depending on the program. So in order to really heal that and come to sovereignty, I believe we have to heal the traumas and then close down the doorways of these interdimensional beings that are actually handling us and manipulating by actually keeping the mind control programs intact. So this is the part that's really difficult to deal with, I think. People don't realize that it's a spiritual war on top of a mind control program. So we have to deal with all elements, and including the diet as well. I mean, we want to be healthy as we can on all levels.
Well, yeah.
I'm trying to remember where I was going to go with this, but No, I was actually compelled to study some of James Caspold's material. Somebody had brought it up earlier in the week, and I actually found one of his older files of one of his stories in my files, and I hadn't really read it. I mean, I go through things quickly and then I forget about it. And then I realized it was very relevant in his story about the kinds of things that are happening that people are reporting, especially with respect to, the artificial intelligence control systems of even the darker, malevolent races that are controlling and handling people, that there's a darker, deeper element of control that is of great concern to, you know, the entire human race. And that's the whole artificial intelligence control system. But even in his story, I mean, basically what they're trying to do, and, you know, he was a Satanic Ritual Abuse Foundation, you know, which, you know, very, very high trauma, right? But the beings that were trying to...
That was going to be another question, actually, Evie.
Yeah.
About what's the difference between trauma-based mind control and satanic ritual, if there is any? Is just another form of the other?
Yes, I think the satanic ritual abuse is the foundation from the spiritual level, where it's obviously satanic, or they're offering up ritual sacrifices to the Satan being. And then they will do that through sacrifice and trauma of their own to be controlled by these entities and to carry out the agenda of that cult. But the trauma-based mind control system is essentially, that's what it came from. It came from these beings, right? And then the military and the medical communities, you know, had their own applications that they did using those original bloodlines. And then now they're basically using whoever they deem that have that, the right genetic match, or maybe whatever spiritual permission they can do with certain people. So I think that the foundation tends to be some kind of cult abuse and trauma-based mind control. And what I'm realizing is that these beings who are handling the people, which are usually the higher level, you can call them demonics or interdimensional beings, they actually seek to break the human mind and spirit so they can shatter the personality and the spirit so they could essentially take possession and control, and using that person as a complete robot or slave. So it's about breaking the human spirit, traumatizing the human spirit, and eventually possessing the bodies. So that's what Michael Prince versus, you know, James Caspolt, same person. He talked about that in his story, which I don't think a lot of people realize the connections between all of this. They may think, oh, well, I'm in a secret space program, or I'm a super soldier, but I'm not clear that these people have done a thorough history and self-exploration of the deep, deep traumas on these other levels and the interdimensional levels that are really running the programs and the people running the programs themselves. I don't think they realize the connections because it's too scary. And they don't see the connections between things.
Because
it's a cognitive dissonance, and I think the trauma is so great. I mean, okay, this is what I see in the alien abduction phenomena, although now they're calling it ET contact, and they're an experiencer, and some people claim that they have visitations with benevolent or neutral beings where there's no apparent trauma, and there may be, okay, but a lot of them, they're what I think it's hidden trauma, and they're just acting out a program or a particular agenda of these beings where, you know, maybe it is a type of hybrid program, but maybe that's just the program they're in, and they're not in the other program that the other people are in that are run by the same beings, you see? So I just think that they believe what they want to believe, a lot of them, and they don't deal with the deeper issues because there's a lot of fear. I think it's a glorified eugenics Nazi program hidden under the ET window theory.
Well, this is coming to the fore. Because I was talking with Jim Nichols. Do you know Jim Nichols?
I've heard the name, but I haven't met them.
He and I are students of Aldebaran and their machinations, which is basically the Nazis, the tall blonde Nordics. The Aldebarans. You may have different names for them, but they are the influence that came through the Vril Society, the Vril Dharman in the 30s and 40s. And that gave them the space travel technology and the time travel technology. I had the great pleasure of proofreading Sean David Morton's latest book at the moment, and it's all about time traveling Nazis, which is my favorite subject. So, you know,
Yeah, there's probably something to that. I mean, James Casbolt alluded to that in the writings that I was just reviewing, and it's all like Nazi stuff, and yeah. and the Aldebarans he mentioned, and the Assyrians and the reptilians, and the doctor, how Dr. Green was really like this vampire being, and oh my God, I mean, I had no idea that this was in this document. I had just forgotten about it.
It's very interesting. Because until a little while ago, just a couple of years ago, the Nazis, that's a thing of the past, we defeated them, la-da-da-da-da. And slowly, a few years ago, I jokingly said NASA stood for Nazis are still active. And, this thing comes haunting more and more and more, is that, these secret space program, front organization
Absolutely.
That jokingly runs around in pop guns, blowing people up and where we know that they've got bug zappers and time travel and space travel and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So.
I think it has, the hidden occult foundation.
Exactly.
As well.
It goes even further, please.
Alice Crowley and the, all the black magic behind it. Mm-hmm. And that's really the foundation of what ran the whole SS.
All
so
right.
when you think about it, then you got to know, okay, so how does that work? So that actually got me on a whole thread of rereading and restudying the Gnostic scriptures of the Nag Hammadi and other Gnostic scriptures to try to get more information on, the whole Demiurge and the Archons, because there is the lower rulers. And so it seems like these malevolent, deceptive organizations like the Nazis were run by these darker beings who were, I think, basically minions of the Demiurge, or what they call the Yaltabaoth. So, and finding out, who's who, really? Who's who in all these hierarchies?
Who's who and who's Yabba Dabba Doo?
Yeah. I mean, there's, good appearing as bad appearing is good, and the good cop, bad cop, and, the evil angels versus the good angels, and, who's the good one, who's the bad one, and...
Well, are there any? Are they actually good or bad?
Well, that's a good question.
Were you a Babylon 5 fan?
Not really, no.
Oh, pity.
Actually.
I love Babylon 5, but one of the things in it is that they have these two races that were looking over humanity, and they were both as bad as each other. But the light ones, the light beings who, walked around mysteriously appearing to people as angels, they were basically deceptive because they were, they didn't really look like that, but they made themselves appear like that.
Yeah.
And the other lot are very kind of chaotic and, allowing anarchy, and they kick over the ant's nest so that the ants build a stronger nest. And that's their philosophy and all that stuff. And, in the end, the captain said, look, just, both of you, get the hell out of our galaxy and let's just get on with what we like to do. And it seems a little bit that way with this whole, it's very quasi-religious hierarchical structure of the universe that they overlay, that they're, we have to have one or the other. No, I think there's other ways of creating our future, don't you?
Yeah, and it's as if... they're trying to throw us into polarized factions where, it has to be this or it has to be that. And then trying to force you into basically just like the political system, they force you to either choose a Republican or a Democrat, and you realize they're both scams, or they're trying to throw you into polarized factions of having to choose between the choices they give you. And it's like, no, I choose neither, because I don't think it's either. I think it's much more complex, and they're trying to drive us into these polarized factions to just keep up a type of conflict and dumb arguments.
I'm not a bipolar bear.
Yeah.
Listen, so I like to make jokes about this stuff because it's so serious, and we've been so serious all night. I just like, by this time I'm needing a bit of light relief. And I'm sure what room for humor? I mean, do you get much room for humor in your life? Do you force yourself to watch comedy? I certainly do.
Oh,
because there's so much stuff that's going on that's so terrible and so, gloomy. I try to keep myself as cheerful as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't want to be all serious and negative and, you know, caught up in all these targeted individual stories, because that can get you really quickly. So yeah, I mean, I do what I need to do to stay on top of it and, you know, be more joyful and not think of everything as being this horrible conflict. I think we can choose a better way, but I think it's good to be wise so that we're not as easily deceived. So it really comes down to being strong inside yourself and who you know who you are deep inside. And when we have that strong foundation of realization, we're not as easily shaken from that. And I think that, to me, is the core of the kind of, let's say, counseling and therapy I do, is to connect with that part of us that we know is truly our strong core, that eternal part, and then sticking with that so that we don't have to be afraid and we don't have to jump to these beings outside of ourselves, so to speak, to save us.
Precisely. Eve, and you see, every time I listen to you, I'm like, oh, yeah, she's just saying it, just laying it out, just exactly the same as I think. So whether, you know, like, you're either correct or we're both as deluded as possible. And I think you're correct. Well, I have to, don't I?
Well, there's learning all the time, though. Yeah. I have to say that, you know, sometimes things that I believed, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I've had to upgrade my own views to take into consideration things that, you know, maybe are not as black and white as I thought they were. And they're a little more complex. So yeah, that's why I'm restudying the Gnostic scriptures again. And then comparing that with, let's say, the Taoist perspective of the cosmology, as well as different therapeutic measures to get back to a deeper self connection with our spirit. And really, what is that? And then clearing out the things that are not necessary, or the false things, like false beliefs or entities that are not ours, or let's say clearing, let's say, ancestral residue that's really not our personal karma, but it has to do with our ancestors. And so I think a lot of people who are in these programs, for example, MKUltra super soldiers, they have a very heavy ancestral residue because they are, let's say, a bloodline of, maybe there's a lot of reptilians or Dracos affecting that line. And so they're born into something, and it's really not all their own stuff, so to speak. So those people tend to have it more difficult, if you ask me.
Yes, it's an interesting thing. I was wondering about walk-ins. And the karma that the walk-ins have to deal with. It's like, you know, you're stepping into this body, and then comes, you're walking down the street, and somebody slaps you in the face, and you're like, why did that person do that? It's because the person who used to be me, or the person whose body I am occupying, used to be a really annoying little a-hole. you know, some of the risks of being a walk-in.
Yeah,
you got to be careful who you walk into, and what their karma is.
What karma really is, and is all that. You know, sometimes it leads you to question that.
Exactly.
I think there's a lot of guilt trips on us, though. When I look back, I think there's a lot of guilt programming, like shame and guilt programming, a lot of this old religious stuff. And, you know, like to have to be a martyr, for example, or to feel like that you have to turn the other cheek when you're being abused, or just to accept it. And, this is something that I've seen in a lot of women who, let's say they've been in abusive relationships with a narcissist, and they feel like, well, if, you know, they just try to heal him and, you know, be perfectly loving and unconditionally accepting, he'll change. And it's like, guess what? They don't change. And it's, you know, your healing thing to get out of the relationship and to set firm boundaries to not be abused anymore. So I think there's a lot of belief systems which actually encourage the predation on humanity through religious belief systems. So I've had to question a lot of things. Because it doesn't work to turn the other cheek and to allow someone to continue abusing you. Because when you enable the perpetrators, you become the other side of the coin, which is, it's basically there's a perpetrator and then there's a victim. But if the victim enables and allows that by not standing up for themselves or getting out of their victim consciousness or their powerlessness belief systems, then they're just enabling the perpetrators. So actually what I see a lot in my counseling is, I get a lot of the whining victims, and I'm not saying that people aren't truly victims, because many are, and like targeted individuals, but if they're off on this whining victim learned helplessness thing because they haven't dealt with or heal the traumas, then they're basically reenacting the abuse by their own mind control programming and unhealed wounds. And so that basically is the other side of the coin that people don't want to look at.
Well, yeah, that's the, because again, you know, we have to, see what we're doing to the people, what we're doing to other people to make them behave in the way that they do towards us.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes, you know, people say, oh, I was so abused by my father every time I had dinner with him and he would slap my face. I said, well, you, and you, you have dinner with them and they're really annoying and they chew their food badly. And you think, now I get it. Yeah. It wasn't really that abusive. They were just like really unbearable. And obviously that, you know, that came from the parent in the first place and, you know, that all comes down the family lines as well. How do you deal with family miasms? Because these are these things that, you know, oh, my mother was like that. Oh, isn't that funny? My daughter's like that. My mother's like that. How much of that do you come across?
A lot. I think people don't, it's about taking self-responsibility to expand our awareness of what, let's say, our blind spots are. And not only the blind spots, but what are we really believing deep inside, not only on a conscious level, but on, let's say, a subconscious level. Because those beliefs is what kind of create our reality. I mean, yeah, that's how we create our reality. So we have to really wake up to what we're believing and what we're assuming about ourselves and other people. So, but miasmas are real. I mean, the ancestral issues are very real. It's genetic, but it's also some kind of energetic karmic thing that happens in certain bloodlines. And I know that if you're part of a bloodline where, you know, your ancestors, you know, basically sold themselves to the devil, okay, if you want to put it bluntly, you're going to have a lot of crap in your life until you take personal responsibility to sever that curse with respect to you and take personal responsibility to realign with your own, quote, source spirit and sever that agreement of entrapment in your own healing process, whatever process you choose. So it's your responsibility. Otherwise, you'll be subject to that until you do something about it. That's what I believe.
So,
which is why a lot of people don't get well and don't heal, is because they don't deal with the deeper levels of why things are happening.
Well, exactly. And, you know, come under the illusion that there's this, I think really what it is the unhealed, very tiny child that has no words to speak of the overwhelm that they're experiencing in their psychic life.
Totally. That's very true. A lot of the traumas are, you know, infant or very pre-verbal child traumas. And so that has to be dealt with sometimes through body work, even not necessarily traditional therapy. In fact, I found that certain forms of Taoist Qigong practices were helpful for other types of traumas where you couldn't really reach them through, let's say, inner child work with regressive hypnosis, where you can actually work with it through breath and movement and meditation visualization. And even with ancestral things, you can work in different ways. So I'm finding it takes an understanding of how is our reality really constructed in our physical bodies and our spiritual bodies and our world, not only from the Western thinking traditions, but also the Eastern traditions, that there's different ways of viewing things. Just for example, Oriental medicine and the meridians, for example, and our chakra systems versus, you know, the simple Western method medical system. And it's good to cross both modalities of understanding to get a more comprehensive healing. I think it would be responsible to do that, because I believe that the aliens, for example, and even these people carrying out these programs of MKUltra and eugenics and hybridization, they know all of that. They know all of that and more. So let's say, for example, the implants, a lot of times the etheric implants, we hear a lot about etheric and energetic implants. Well, they're placed very commonly in the, I guess we'd call the spleen and gallbladder liver meridians. For some reason, those tend to be a good meridian to place implants because they affect us more easily. So when we do clearings of certain meridians and energy pathways through Qigong, for example, we can help clear ourselves of some of these etheric implants without having to run to every healer that we think could save us. So there's a lot of things we could actually do ourselves if we know how, or if we're willing to explore that.
And to that end, I'm interested in, as I said, running webinars. And, you know, would you, I know you've written about this, but would you be interested in running a webinar?
Sure. Yeah. And, I mean,
because these are the things that we need to know, how to deprogram ourselves quickly, efficiently, without having to spend thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, because there's so many people like, oh, can you clear me? And they're afraid that, you know, they have implants or they have an entity and they want somebody to do it all for them. And what I'm finding is that people, the reason why these things are happening is because they don't have a thorough understanding of the spiritual laws, why things happen the way they happen and why things work the way they work and what truly healing is and clearing. It's a process of self-responsibility and awareness. And once we do that and we connect with our spirit and our willpower and kind of like the pure part of who we are that connects you deeper and deeper into what I call the spiritual virtues. When we connect with that, it's like things tend to take care of themselves over time. And it's not about having somebody else heal you. It's about self-responsibility and awareness, getting out of the mind control programming of powerlessness. So that's like the whole victim programming thing. It's really heavy in our society. Very heavy.
Well, you know, this is part of, you know, the process that I'm observing in myself and with everybody is the overcoming of the overwhelming sense of powerlessness.
Oh, yes.
And haven't you noticed that in movies, more and more, the odds against winning by the home team, as it were, are overwhelming? And, you know, it got to be like that, I think about the end of the 90s and around 9/11, particularly, is this sense of it's overwhelming and it's too many and we'll never do it. And there's, oh, you know, you'll never get over it, you know. And it's a whole hype.
Yeah, part of it is, well,
it's a meme, isn't it? It's a Stockholm syndrome kind of, yes. Oh, you'll never, now what is it? What happens? Cause it's something that people say to abused children. Who will you run to? Who's going to protect you?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, that programming runs deep. Although, you know, as children, we're born into situations where we truly are powerless, and that's a very difficult thing. Even as adults, when we, you know, have a cataclysmic trauma or a car accident, there are true powerlessness moments and experiences that we have to integrate eventually when we're healing. And that's actually a reality, that sometimes these things do happen. So there is a way of healing, but I think healing takes time and it takes acceptance and it takes relief and it takes, what I'm seeing is that the grieving process of loss tends to be where we stop short, especially in, I think, the Western culture, maybe in other cultures, but that's the part that people don't want to go to because it's really scary to feel deep sense of loss and grief and sadness. So that's a place where people stop short. And that's why things don't change, is because you have to go through the whole process. And when you come out the other end, you come out with, you know, shining compassion and love and joy and an overflowing heart of just beauty. So we have that capability. It's just that many of us stop short of that through fear.
And well, because as you said, this program is laid down before we're even conscious. Or
yeah.
No, not before we're even conscious. Because, you know, in my analysis of it is we're not able to remember it because in the same way that, you know, every room has its own resonance, its own frequency. So you walk from one room to another. And if you're on, you know, if you're tuned into things, you know, if you're somebody who tunes into people like, you know, professional psychic or something like that, you know, it's a natural thing to tune to the resonance of wherever you are. And This is why, this is my theory on why I forget things and why I stand in the middle of a room thinking, what was it that I've just forgotten? And I have to go back to the original room in order to re-achieve the vibration of was thinking about, because it's just like a dream. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you think, oh yeah, I'm going to remember this. I'm going to, oh, what did I forget? Oh, I forgot the dream.
Oh yeah. I think there's something to that. I remember, there was a Buddhist teacher that I used to listen to these CDs, and she used to talk about how the reason why we forget is because we are in a vibrational frequency. If you go back to, let's say, the room where you thought the original thought or the original dream, you're like, oh yeah, now I remember. You just like walk backwards to the same spot, and then all of a sudden you remember what you forgot. You just had to walk to a different room. But I think similar things happen, let's say, in our dream state, where I've had this happen with not only myself, but others who remember, let's say, abduction or other visitation kinds of experiences, even time travel. But you can only remember it when you're in that state of a dream, and then you're able to access that memory and that part of yourself within that state. But in the regular waking consciousness, in the regular physical world, that memory is not accessible. So they say memory is state dependent. So it's really interesting that there's things you can access in different states of consciousness where you really know and realize and remember, but you just didn't have access to it in your other waking state of consciousness. That tells us that we are very multidimensional.
Exactly. And it's when we're, and this is what I'm going towards, is that when we have a trauma and we are unable to go through the acceptance stage, this vibrational energy that we've taken on, which is, you know, everything's a vibration. So we've just taken on a vibration and we've frozen in it. Mm-hmm. And somehow that becomes crystallized.
Yes.
And it becomes like actually, you know, literally a crystal, a pointy little thing that if you poke it with your finger, you know, a massa, you know, you poke that point and it's like, wow, you know, you leap off the chair. So, the whole energy becomes locked up and,
yes.
It's all about the acceptance of it and
yeah, you
the
know,
inability to, but that we need to get to why don't people accept? That's the
yeah, the whole acceptance thing. I mean, that I think is such a mystery really, because what I'm finding is that when we really want to heal, let's say come to the place of acceptance, we have to be in a place of safety where we're in, I believe that we're encompassed by compassion and safety. And we have to be also psychologically ready to face whatever that we're not accepting. But when we can have that space of compassion and safety, we're able to accept and then things just flow. But the whole thing you said about how they're like crystals that are stuck energy, I believe that's actually true even in a physical sense. In some modalities like holographic kinetics, Aboriginal dream time healing, where we're accessing, let's say, traumas, we want to clear those traumas and pick up the experience and release the emotions, and we release it with the breath. So there's a lot of physiological things going along with this clearing process. But when we clear that, what happens is these crystals that were stuck in our bioenergy field and in our body will dissolve. And so we have what we call a process of defragging when those crystals dissolve and we're getting a flow of the natural flow of our energies, and our energies are coming back to us that was stuck before. So you may actually have more energy and more memories come back, or you'll have a physiological process like you might get really, really tired for several days or weeks, or you'll have to pee like crazy, or you'll have a purging reaction. There's different physiological responses that can happen when you clear these traumas. So there's something very physical to it as well.
So having got down to the physical, let's take a quick break because we all are at the first top of the hour. That was quick, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm ready. Water, yeah.
Indeed. Tracy Chapman, Matters of the Heart. See you in 4 minutes, 23 seconds. Welcome back to Ever Beyond with JP and my guest, Eve Lorgan, this evening. Bang, Bang, Bang by Tracy Chapman. So, Eve, are you back with us? No, not yet. So anyway, let's talk about Ever Beyond for a moment. The subscriptions to Wolf Spirit Radio can be purchased at the wolfspiritradio.com main site. If you click on home when you go to the listen site, or you know the one with the wolf, and click on the subscriber link, the bottom right hand side of the page, and you can download as much as you like. As I said, it took me several days to download the whole lot, because I needed to, you know, make a backup. And if you have enough broadband speed and you can actually bear it, you know, not to do anything for 5 days, you could download the whole thing and fine, you know, whatever. But most people like to just listen to the things that they wanted to listen to. So you take what you want, and there's as much for, there's plenty for everybody. So that's Wolf Spirit Radio. If you want to listen into the show, it's on www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen, also on everbeyondradio.com, and various other things that various other things that I've got players on, oneness in the light.com, all sorts of places. Anyway, so at wolfspiritradio.com/listen, there is a fantastic chat room full of lovely people, moderated by the beautiful Shebe Bright Eyes and lovely Vanessa, and with occasional very loud comments by old ones. So I hope you're enjoying your mixing decks, old ones. He's just received a station. Well, it's not really a gift. It's work. It means work. Mwahaha. Anyway, Eve, are you back with me? Nope.
I'm here.
There you are. There you are. Good evening. Right. So there we go. I can turn off my speaker now. So, where were we? I was just reminding people how they can come to the subscriber section of Wolf Spirit Radio. We also have a forum. Where people can discuss things that have appeared on Wolf Spirit Radio, and things perhaps, you know, combinations that they'd like to see. And like I was saying, I was experiencing this this round table last weekend, and I thought, these are all guys, so I need some, I need to balance this out with some feminine energy. And I thought, yes. I spoke to James Barclay.
I was just thinking about him. It's funny you mentioned.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy, and he came on the ODD show a few months ago, and I thought, man, this man is a fountain. He is an absolute fountain. And he was telling me about how his own personal experiences with Alex Collier years and years ago.
Yes, years ago. I remember. Yeah.
And yourself, you were in this little group as well.
Way back in the 90s. I mean, I remember a lot of things that we learned, which I think a lot of people forget about in the field. I noticed there's a kind of attention deficit disorder going on in the research field. And I guess it's just because people, you know, they're on Facebook and they have a short attention span, I think. And people are mostly listening to interviews instead of reading or looking through the history. And I just find that a lot of the same scams being played over and over again, or the similar psychological things that people do, because humans are humans. They fall for the same tricks over and over again, except they have a different window dressing kind of thing. So I think the same kinds of things happen now that they did 20 years ago, you know?
Well, yeah, this is, and one of the reasons that, I like to do what I do is to help people learn to discern and discriminate. I explained in greater detail about an hour and a half ago, but what I exactly meant by that. But essentially to be able to see what is what and decide that you want it or not want it, and, you know, take appropriate action. We're all about tools and solutions. How do we, first of all, discern what is, you know, how do we know what doesn't serve us? How do we, you know, obviously, time, that helps, but, you know, there's not much time left, and people are having to learn to swim while they're drowning at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're sitting here complacently thinking, ah, I've been through that. Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That one sucks, doesn't it? Oh. It's like, yeah, I remember that. It was a long time ago.
No, I think people are waking up quicker.
Yeah.
So becoming more aware because there's more information out there, but the learning curve is faster now.
It's steep. It's really steep. It's like,
I mean, people could wake up in 2 years and it's a very traumatic experience in terms of understanding what's happening in the world versus, you know, what they thought. And that could be a very emotionally trying experience. Mm. So.
And to me.
Yeah.
Eve, that is disclosure.
The
waking up to who we actually are, you know, standing on this planet, being these amazing noble beings that we thought were just mythology. That's who we are. We're just here on the planet. You know, and what they call the, you know, the 12th strand of ascended human is the person who realizes that they're an emanation of a, well, of the one, of the source, the isness, the big cheese, the grand fromage, the mother of all, the great universal beingness.
Yeah, I mean, that's not easy. And emanation is really what it is. I think it's more like a dreaming, and it's not always easy to come to that place. And most people, I don't think they really, they might know it on a conceptual level, but in terms of deep realization, it's not really that common except for like these yogis and people who've gone through near-death experiences and that kind of thing.
But I think that's going to happen on a greater scale. This is the awakening, you know, this is the process we're all going through. Now, people like yourself, you've been through this in previous cycles and you've decided that you didn't want it to end the same way. So you're going to make a different way, try it differently this time. And I believe that the way we've done this is we've done a complete memory wipe. So we act completely naturally. You know, we don't, because perhaps every time we had an inkling of what went on and we can be a bit complacent, but we have to be literally in the moment, every moment.
Yeah, because that's how you connect with the spontaneity of the spirit.
Correct.
Which means actually letting go of the conscious, well, the conceptual mind so much and the worrying and the planning. And this is something that I remember there was I don't know if you ever remember the guy named Jonathan Adam Pant who did many, I guess, audio recordings. And I think it was 2007 and 8 where he talked about all kinds of things like, you know, how the universe is and when the veil lifted of his consciousness and how things are and how when he started seeing, you know, demons popping into people or working through people and the synchronicities and, you know, just how things work. And now I'm trying to remember what I was going to say. I just lost the train of thought. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah. You've gone through it. But it's about consciousness and
yes.
wordiness
and
the wordy worry vibe.
Yeah.
Is what it's takes like, us down.
Well, what we learned early on, I'm sure James even mentioned this early on in, let's say, the alien abduction and paranormal conspiracy related research, there was a truth disrupting and distracting force that appeared to be very palpable in many people's lives that was preventing, let's say, the awakening process or the therapy process or the bringing out of information. So there was always something like that going on, let's say where we plan to meet or have a support group thing or go to a conference or meet a very key important researcher and then something would sabotage it. And it appeared that it was always something that we couldn't plan for. And so one of the things that it seems in this world, I don't know if it's AI or if it's how this world is interdimensionally handled on these levels that we don't quite see, so that when we try to plan something, it's easily sabotaged by the quote powers that be, whatever they are, to prevent these kinds of things. So that the way to really make magic happen, which Jonathan Adam Pant talked about, was that, you know, the spontaneity of the spirit working through you, he called it the creative spirit, whatever you want to call it. It works more magically and more powerfully when we can be in spontaneity of expression of that beingness in us. Which is hard to do when we have plans and we have to live by the clock. But that's how you can connect more powerfully, where the, let's say, the dark side cannot necessarily preempt that spontaneity. So it's almost as if your conscious mind can't even know what you're going to say or do. You're just being led by receptivity to your own spirit to do and be and go wherever that leads you to. And that's actually kind of a scary place to be, because it's a kind of a letting go and allowing and moving in a flow that's different from, you know, planning in the conceptual world.
You know, so, if there's a word that you just used, and it's the word allowing.
Yes.
And there's no word for it really than allowing, but it's the opposite of what allowing is, because right. Allowing is, you know, because what I understand you to mean is a dynamic version of allowing something to happen, in the same way that you dynamically allow your plants to grow in a good herb garden by clearing the soil, making sure the nutrients are right. That's a dynamic version of allowing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's no real word for it yet. I suppose the word cultivate means.
Yeah, and it's hard to find those places, especially if we're in fear or we're not allowed to have the spaciousness of safety. And, you know, safety is difficult to have if you've had a life of trauma or you're very stressed out and worried about whether or not you can pay the bills. So when we can live in that spacious safety of allowing and receptivity, but still being active, that's when the spirit can really flow through us. And I think we as human beings were designed to be able to live in that flow, but because of the trauma of what's the conflict that's going on, and it really is a war on the soul, if you ask me. I think it goes back to whatever happened in the beginning there, and goes back to the Gnostic tractates, for example, that there appeared to be some kind of lack happening where there's a lower rulers that have attacked humanity through jealousy, and they want to corrupt and attack and vampirize and parasite the human race. And so that we're dealing with that. We're dealing with a natural predation on our soul. So it's hard.
It's a sort of psychic food chain thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's all part of a natural process, but, in the same way that this parasitic, malevolent, I called it the Nung.
That's a word in the Gnostic, because I was reading that. No, that's a word. It doesn't mean nun in the monk sense, but I can't remember now what it means, but I saw it in the Gnostic. I think it's a Greek word.
Well, no, it's N-U-N-G, Nung.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because, you know, let me just introduce you to your Nung, if you have one. You picture yourself standing in front of a nice warm oven, which about half an hour ago you put a loaf of bread in, and you've got a loaf of bread there in the oven, and you know it's just about to open. You can smell the thing. You open up the door, and this waft of warm, moist, yeasty thing comes up, and this desire in you just builds and builds and builds, come from within, this sense of that all you want to do is wait until this thing's cooled down enough so you can cut a slice out of it and put loads of butter in it, and then just maybe even take the crust off if nobody's looking, and go, nung, 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 nung. So, if anybody who's listening salivated at all in any of that last part, that's your Nung talking. And, it lives in your body and it hijacks your feelings.
Oh, okay. The desires, you mean, like?
It's got two desires. Well, it's got two feelings. It's hungry or it's lonely.
Oh.
And if it's lonely, it desires to have more of itself. So it makes you want to eat bread or drink beer.
Oh, wow.
I must have a sandwich. Let's go and have a beer. Or, you know, let's go and get some friends and go and eat sandwiches. Let's go out for lunch. Or let's go out and drink beer together.
It's true. You're right about that, actually.
Okay, so this is a consciousness. I spoke to it once. You know, I tuned in. I thought, oh, what the heck is going on here? And so, you know, I get what it's about. And I realize that I can't really get rid of it, but if I take enough borax, it'll keep it at bay. And it's a necrotic situation. It's there for a purpose. It's there to eat us when we're died, when we've died. So if it can just kind of go to a place where it can just hang out until that time, and not take over my life and not try and make me drink beer or eat chocolate. All right. So the other one is food.
Chocolate. Yeah.
It wants friends and it wants food. So it feels hungry. So it's alone and it's hungry. It feels lonely and hungry, you know?
Do you think this is the same thing that Castaneda talked about when he talked about the predator mind, or that it's our own mind? It's kind of like the Archon mind virus that exists in us.
I think it works as that. I think in some way, all these things work together, like on different levels of reality. So on one level, you've got the Archons in the fourth dimension, but on the third dimension, you've got this mold network that maybe the Archons can transmit on the fungus network.
Yeah.
You know, they can get, you know, tune into the frequency. And maybe some days, you know, like, oh, let's, you know, people aren't eating enough bread. You know, let's make a sandwich day, you know, it's wow. Turkey sandwich day. Oh, poor old turkeys. They suffer again. Anyway.
That's true though. The whole thing about, well, there's a hunger and then there's a loneliness, but what is that really about? You know, is it about, because we don't realize our connectedness with everyone else, and that we feel hungry because we don't feel love and connection. Mm. And it really is about love and connection. I would have to agree that, you know, people need each other and they need to feel connected and loved, you know, it's a human nature.
Mm. So with this, probably put you off a bit there by introducing the Nung into the conversation, but I think it's a very important thing. And I also believe that there is a planetary level of it. A galactic level of that, mm-hmm. that creates malevolent races.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, that goes back to some of the Gnostic why, you know, how the Demiurge was created. And it's kind of unusual when you think about it.
So would you like to share the story of the, you know, of the Gnostic creation myth that got the Demiurge into place, or anything that you've learned?
Yeah, you know, I've read it over and over and over. And it still is not completely clear to me or makes complete sense. Although what makes sense is our observation of what we're experiencing throughout history, that there's definitely some lower level rulers going on manipulating through these false gods. We know that, and the whole fallen angel thing. But to me, it's somewhat of a mystery, as if it just doesn't make sense really. Why would there be an Aeon named Sophia who, you know, had her own son without a consort, and because she didn't have a consort, the son was this arrogant one who didn't have the qualities of the eternal realm, because it basically like an aborted fetus. And to me, it really just doesn't seem right. I don't know why, but it's an incomplete creation of sorts, and how it all came to be. And I don't think the Taoists even have that understanding in terms of the cosmology. They just see things as, you know, out of the all incomprehensible one comes a yin yang, and then the yin and yang, and the five elements into the 64, and it makes sense. But it seems like there's a consuming darkness that is not natural to this universe. And I even asked a Taoist Qigong master about this, because of what we're experiencing in, let's say, the MK Ultra and the artificial intelligence, and this unusual darkness that appears to be not natural to our universe. And so he even admitted to, you know, having dealt with a lot of unusual cases of, you know, dark spiritual warfare or attacks, different things. And he said that there is a darkness that is unnatural that appears to come from another cosmos or another universe. And so there's something to that, that's actually not natural to our universe. And this was something that Dr. Karada Malanga found in his own way of explaining it. And he worked with the people who've had a lot of alien abduction experiences, where there were certain kinds of parasiting aliens. He's calling them aliens, but they're really incorporeal beings or corporeal beings. Either they have a body or they don't have a body. And the ones who don't have a body actually take on a form just to interact with us even in the fourth dimension. So from some of them that have parasited us that are from this other dark universe, they're actually nothing more than a black dot or shadow that's like a consuming darkness, but it has the same essence as what's described in the Gnostic tractates, like the envy and the jealousy and the extreme arrogance. And then this particular parasiting consciousness will latch on to us through archetypically the backside of our energy body and certain actually chakra areas they actually link into. And then they have that essence of envy, jealousy, hatred, and extreme arrogance. And so when you see those qualities in someone who's basically hosted, then you know they're being basically possessed or partially possessed by the same kind of predator darkness that appears to come from another universe. So I really don't have all the answers. All I have is really observations and, you know, historical writings about these things. It's as if there is something unnatural in our reality that is really not. Let's say, you know how we have yin and yang. Yeah. We have light and dark, and it's actually part of all the same thing. But this darkness is not part of the yin darkness that is natural. It's an unnatural consuming darkness that would consume all life here and be completely unnatural. And it's the same thing that's actually described in the Caspolt writings about this artificial intelligence that is, it's very unnatural. And if it takes it to the ultimate goal of its intention, it would destroy all humanity.
Now,
it's soul consuming and destroying.
Going back to our mutual friend, Alex Collier, he says that 800 years in the future, that's what happens.
Oh, no, really?
You know what I'm saying? This is the tyranny that comes over the universe, that comes over the galaxy.
Well, there's something,
and
there's
so
something to that.
It comes from here. It's traced to the expansion point here. And this is the point where we, as evolving humans, can, and this is a another guest I've had, Dan McBoylan.
Oh yes, him. He's got an interesting take.
We've been working out the commanding, you know, because we're manifesting humans. And when you get to the point of manifesting and you realize, oh, I can change the universe with what I say and what I think.
Yes.
Then talking to yourself is really important. Because when you're talking to yourself, you're actually learning something. Because half of the time I don't listen. But in being able to command these things to, I have to say that Dan was saying shut down and uninstall. I said, no, you want it to delete as well. So you have to shut down, uninstall, and delete. And so we've got a kind of new Ho'oponopono for shutting down the AI, and it really works.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real issue that I think there's probably secret projects going on to try to deal with that as well. And I think some of the fears with the targeted individuals and targeting technologies is that, you know, theoretically, once someone's on a list that the AI has identified and the AI is controlling it as opposed to humans, even on their, behind their consoles or whatever, then you'll be targeted forever, and it would lead to not a very pleasant end if this control is left in the hands of some kind of artificial intelligence as opposed to, quote, a human. But the problem I see is that many of the humans who are, let's say, handlers for some of these nefarious programs, and let's say they're completely hosted by a demonic being, and all you have to do is read, you know, Elissa E's book, Beyond Our Life and MK Ultra. She was one of these satanic ritual abuse victims from a high level bloodline family, more associated with the Mormon angle. But really, you're talking about people who've been traumatized and victimized throughout their whole lives in these bloodlines, and they're just carrying it on from, you know, parent to child. And then what happens is when they become split and they're unhealed, they become possessed by these non-human beings. So you have humans who are completely hosted or possessed by these malevolent entities who have their own agenda to do what they do to people in these programs. So we have to gain back our humanity, which means healing and retrieving our souls that are basically being hijacked by these dark beings. So it's really important for us to bring back the humanity element of healing and integration and getting it out of the hands of these malevolent entities as well as these technologies. So it's going to take the human, a human effort to get back to being human and not alien. It's like there's a lot of this emphasis on, oh, I'm an alien ET hybrid. It's all, I'm wonderful. And that to me is a mind control program. It's like, wait a minute. There's nothing wrong with being human and humanity itself. We don't need to be alien or ET or blah, blah, blah. You know, we're here human on this earth. Let's be human to one another. Let's love one another. Let's not get off on these like friggin' ego trips that you're some special hybrid with all these abilities. Okay. I see a lot of that, believe me. And I think it stinks. I think there's a lot of egotism and bullshit going on. And then behind that, maybe amassed hidden traumas or mind control programming they haven't even dealt with. I'm not saying that in all cases, but I'm saying that that does happen.
I think you're spot on there, Eve. Because we see this a lot. And, we have to see what's going on. And so we have to get a cross section of people, passing through the radio stations so that we can see what they are, you know, and some of them may be telling the truth, some of them may not be. But the whole idea is not to try and protect our listeners, but to expose the listeners to what is out there and for people to make their own choices. And a lot of times in the chat room, you can really tell, you know, this person is really off, and they're all really, you know, screaming and chattering in the chat room. Ah, and there's fights breaking out and all sorts of negative energies from the guest. You know, it's really interesting.
That, the whole troll thing, that the internet is being, well, infused with a lot of people who are hired as trolls to have certain opinions on forums where they give an unnatural viewpoint that is statistically incorrect to what the real population is feeling and believing. And they do this deliberately to spin public opinion so that they make it think like, you know, people believe a certain thing when they really don't. And I know that that's happening. I mean, that's huge. And you'd have to be able to identify who are these fake trolls pretending, having all these notional identities and, you know, infecting forums with bullshit, you know. It happens a lot.
Talking of psyops, I remember, as I was saying, how things have changed for me in the last couple of years, and probably for you, and for everybody in their own exponential way, is when I was younger, I read George Adamski and I, you know, heard about Billy Meyer and all this stuff, and I thought aliens and I thought ETs and, you know, greys and all this stuff. But more and more I've been studying the 1930s and 1940s of the Vril Dahman and the Glocker, the Nazi Bell. And as I said, I'm proofreading The Sands of Time, so that's got a big connection there.
With the Nazi Bell.
With the Nazis, that's yes.
Fred Bell's writings?
Fred Bell is different from the Nazi Bell.
Okay.
No. The Nazi Bell, Fred Bell worked on the project that mirrored the Nazi Bell.
Okay.
The Nazi Bell is called Die Glocke, and it's the power unit for the Nazi UFOs. So what I'm getting to is that the Nazis had anti-gravity technology in the 1940s. They had time technology. And the Kecksburg incident is the place where the Die Glocke ripped through its hole in space and time and crash landed. So the Kecksburg incident was actually a Nazi UFO. And then we hear about the Antarctic and the Foo Fighters, and we hear about Admiral Byrd being handed his ass on a plate. When he went to Antarctica with Operation High Jump, you know, they basically nearly wiped them out with, UFOs with Nazi cannons, you know, Nazi insignia and, cannons.
So, oh gosh, yeah. I mean, there's people who report the Nazi presence in Milab experiences and even abduction experiences, even the Betty and Barney Hill, where Barney Hill was saying that these entities, he was saying, they're Nazis in his hypnotic regression.
Exactly.
It was famous. And I think people didn't recognize in the early research years the propaganda as it was unfolding. But years later, we can look back at even at some of these older cases, which even there was a case that Val Valerian did years ago in the 90s about a case in Mount Lassen, which was recorded on one of Alan D. Walton's websites years ago. But in that abduction, I don't think it was reported. It's like people don't, sometimes they won't report things because they don't feel like that they will have credibility if they report an aspect of the experience, because during that time, people wanted the more nuts and bolts to make it a credible experience. So they may take things out of it, but really, if you include everything in that report and you don't leave anything out, you might see more things years later that you didn't see before. Like in some of these cases, they're classic UFO cases, but you could see that the researcher didn't take into consideration that there's this person, let's say the experiencer who had the abduction, they're really in my lab and they're going in for programming in these underground bases, and the aliens are there doing it in liaison with humans, or what it appears to be, but they're going in for programming, and that these people are really MK Ultra deep level, but they don't know it. They think it's just an alien abduction. So it's because the researcher didn't even know, because they didn't do the research. They didn't know there was a connection in a lot of these cases. That's what I'm saying.
So, now, as I say, you know, I used to believe in aliens. Now, I'm much more concerned with the Nazis. Because what could be worse than a Nazi with space travel was about a Nazi with time travel.
Mm.
You know, and how they could mess history up real well. Guess what? That's what Sands of Time 3 is about.
Sounds good.
It's good. Yeah, I tell you, I'm really excited about it. I'm really pleased that I've been given. And it's, you know, I'm just dropping a few clues here because it's really going to be worth it. Anyway, but as I was saying, I used to believe in aliens and ETs, and you know, people are abducted by these little greys, and now it's turning out more and more. Oh my god, Billy Meyer, he spoke to this. You know, this blonde woman who spoke Austrian perfectly. Oh, right. Hang on a second. In conversation with Jim Nichols, he and I are convinced that that was Maria Orsic or another member of the Vril Dom.
Whoa.
See? Boom. There goes another one.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I remember
And Evie, please. Why are they all called George? Why?
Goodness. That's kind of strange,
you know,
isn't
what I'm
it?
Saying.
I mean, there's always these things you got to look at in terms of symbology and archetypal myths being played out and little plays on words. There's all these hidden things that could be going on. Although I still think there's such thing as interdimensional non-human beings that are directly interacting with people, even in abductions. Although there's something that Barbara Bartholik had found out was that many of these, let's say, reptilian types of beings, they could obviously shapeshift and take on an appearance of a human. And in some of her cases, some of the aliens actually took on the appearance of human military in abductions. And then conversely, there were military who would pretend and have these cardboard cutouts of reptilians and scare people who were all tranced out in these group abductions. And I know this because I worked with a woman who witnessed this, with being abducted with a group of people in the high desert, and they were all drugged, and the military were there, and they had this big cardboard cutout of a reptilian being, and since the people were tranced out, they thought it was real, and they were afraid, and then there was real military actually pretending that was a reptilian. So I see actually both things going on, like the whole theater thing with fake aliens, but then sometimes you really do have these non-human entities who really are shapeshifters and making you think you're seeing, you know, human military, and it's really like this friggin' reptilian, you know?
Yeah, there's humans pretend. It's like that, I can't remember what film it was, and they did a promo for it, and the guy took off his mask, and he was an alien underneath, and again, he takes off the mask, and he's a human underneath the alien pretending to be a human. it's like awesome. Which one is which? You know, or the guy behind the counter takes off his mask and he's the alien. And that was all right. It was at the end of the Tinfoil by Weird Al Yankovic. Is the cameraman takes off his mask and he's a reptilian.
Yes.
You know, have you seen that one?
You know, I don't think so.
It's a parody. It's a parody of the Royals.
That was probably funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. He's very good. I might even play it afterwards. Anyway, that's so yeah. So who's pretending to be who? And in the end, there are, it seems, benevolent aliens. There are military abductions.
Yes.
There are government agencies. There are secret space programs that mirror these TV shows that we've been watching since we were kids.
Yes.
There are secret genetic mutation programs that create the so-called superheroes of the 40s and 50s.
Yes, yes. In fact, I was reading the recent Alta report by Cliff High.
Oh,
and,
Cliff, how's it doing?
It was interesting. I know most people probably know what that is. I don't have to describe it, but in the, I think it was the March issue, which was the most recent one, he talks about in the near future, probably within the year or two. I'm not sure how far out he went, but there's going to be something that I think they call it genetic crimping, where it's going to start becoming more known that they're able to genetically modify people for beneficial purposes, and they will call them the crimps or the genetic crimping. So I think there's that already going on in some of these secret projects where people are genetically modified in different ways. And there's been all kinds of programs for years with different kind of genetic augmentation going on, or chimera, or fusing tissue. In fact, James Bartley and I knew a woman years ago who we met through Barbara Bartholik, and this woman was an abductee in Texas who happened to be, it appeared to be, she was one of these opportunistic medical experimentees with aliens and humans working in conjunction in some kind of secret laboratory. And she would get abducted often, sometimes twice a week, and where the Greys would work on her and the military would work on her. But she was actually being grafted in with alien Grey neurological tissue in her spinal column. And they were actually fusing alien neurological tissue in her to see if it would work in like a chimera kinds of tissue transplantation process. Unfortunately, you know, she didn't live very long, and it was a very sad situation. But we knew even back then they were doing experimentation with those kinds of things, like grafting in alien tissue in her body. And it was quite unfortunate. You know, she did die. I mean, she died at age 44 of liver failure. She had no teeth and living in a one-room place with no running water because she couldn't get help. And, you know, when she tried to talk, nobody would listen to her. And it's these kinds of things that really get me, that are happening here in America under our noses, and they can't get help. It's just an abomination, really, you know?
Well, exactly. And so, you know, as you may be aware, we've managed to get Alex Collier into a house, into an apartment in Colorado.
Oh, good.
And because he was living on living in his car.
It's so unfortunate. The targeting is very severe with a lot of researchers and whistleblowers and people trying to break out of their programs. It happens to me too. I mean, this happens usually before big radio shows or TV things, or if I work with a certain client, then get beamed with frequencies or have dream hacks. And, it still happens to me, and I haven't found a way to completely stop all this. I just think that once you're vocal for something, you do get targeted. It's just the way it is now, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, the way I've tried to be very circumspect about the whole thing and place everything in place first, before I start to talk about, well, people start to understand that, you know, I'm promoting an attitude rather than a particular thing. It's that we can fix anything that we can put our mind to and our hearts to, because that's what manifesting humans are.
Yeah.
And that's what the next level is. So I don't care about what, drama is going on, because you can fix it, because you don't need to go into the drama to fix the problem. You know, you don't need to look at the TV screen to know that you need to go and change the fuse at the back.
You just gotta keep moving forward and stay focused on what you want. And don't back down.
That's right. So, wow. There we go. That was an hour and three quarters. We've got 15 minutes to go or so. So, I think it's been a phenomenal afternoon, of some very, very high-minded conversation. Thank you for, taking it, even further. We go deeper. You take things deep.
And well, there's more things to learn all the time. It seems like I think that's keeping me humble. Is that sometimes I think I know the answers and I'm on top of it, and then something happens. I'm like, okay, I don't know everything. There's more to learn here, and I got to be humble and still be empowered at the same time.
Yeah. So here's something that that may drop things into place. In conversation with another host here, Jessica Morocco, she has a series of papers that she's been receiving. You know, she's been having conversations and making and writing them down with these entities, and I've been reading them out, and it's quite fun. And I have these characters, but in amongst the whole thing is like, where did it all start? What's it all about? What's it all about? And it comes down to, essentially, there was a group of beings way, way, way long ago who created something that kind of turned out to be reptilians. And they basically really didn't nurture them or care for them and didn't have any idea that that's what they needed. And they basically were, you know, flushed down the toilet. You're Ninja Turtles. I mean, essentially. And they survived and they grew their own consciousness, but they'd been traumatized, and the trauma that was that they were not loved or cared for. And that's why they cannot deal with any love or care, because it reminds them too much of the pain of their original thing that they've carried since the beginning of time.
Yeah. I mean, that's a psychological thing that happens to people who've been extremely traumatized or grieved. That if you even remind them by having the presence of love in their life, it causes a reaction. Yeah.
Triggering.
Yeah.
Triggering. So, that was a very interesting insight, because it also gave some kind of clue as to how we can deal with it. I mean, your quest will always end up in healing it for yourself. That every time you heal one of your clients, another part of yourself has greater understanding, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So,
yeah, and
it's a long story, you know.
Yeah, different. Like, there's not always the same recipe for everyone. Like, some people, depending on their own personality quirks and how they've responded to their life, how they've been shaped, may need something else in the same situation as someone else. So I could never assume. All I can do is actually be there for them so they can self-realize it and help ask the question of maybe where they need to explore to go where they need to go. Mm. It's not everybody's the same, really.
Yeah. Absolutely. Everybody's had their own personal experience of the jackboot stomping into their face. And that's what it is in the end. It's our experience of being traumatized by this creates even more trauma until we realize it. Because we share my little adage is everybody shares their feelings. And sometimes we share them by, you know, saying, well, I'm feeling really terrible today. Or we make people feel the way we feel. Mm-hmm. There's a whole other way of sharing feelings. Here, I feel rubbish. Here, let me make you feel rubbish.
Yeah, rain on your parade.
So that's it. Exactly. Yeah. So we have a communication that, it's like, well, it's exactly like the whole dream state thing. You know, that you don't remember the dream state? Is that we communicate in a kind of dream state when we're communicating our angst. which makes us, makes other people feel terrible.
Oh yes. Yeah. It helps to be aware and be able to be authentic. Although sometimes people don't have the capacity to hear or be present with you because they're not present with themselves.
Exactly.
And that, I find that that's just another level of, let's say when you're learning compassionate communication and you're with a group where it's okay and it's safe to play by these rules of open heart communication, then everything's wonderful and you can just be who you are and feel comfortable, but you can't always bring that out into your work environment or even your family because they haven't learned how to play by those rules of open heart connectedness and communication. Yeah. So it's a learning process and it takes time.
Yeah, they haven't got to the nonviolent communication ability.
Yeah. That doesn't work with everybody either. So, yeah.
It's tricky, and it's a bit like, oh well, you know, I was shown this is how we should be. Well, you were programmed, yes. and you know, you watch how a Native American or a Native anywhere else than Europe, communicates, and you know they're not pushy in any way whatsoever. In fact, you have to go to them in order to communicate. They're not proselytizing. They're not pushing their story, you know. This is how I am. It's not my problem if you have a problem. Except it's because, you know, if you start hurting my kids, you know, that's when you start having a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, just being by the heart. Sometimes that's a strange place to be if we're not used to that. If we haven't been raised that way,
That's our future, though, isn't it? Because
that would be nice. Yeah,
the heart is. If my personal thing is, if we don't act through the heart in the next few years, that's when we die. You know, that's how people, you know, have terrible accidents. They get hit by meteors. There'll be, a sinkhole will open up just next to them, but their friend who is standing next to them that's going to be it. It's like, how close to your heart are you? And your heart will lead you. Your heart, if somebody's connected with their heart, there won't be anywhere near a sinkhole. There'll be nowhere near the massive boulder that's falling out of the sky. You know, the just heart will know.
Yeah, it's funny. Kids teach. Like, you know, when you have children and if you have something unresolved inside you or you're afraid to speak the truth about something, the kids always act it out and you can't keep secrets. So it's like that. It's like when you have something in your heart that you can't express because you're afraid, you don't feel safe, the kids act it out. But if you can be safe in yourself, your kids are more happy, you know, it always is reflected somewhere in your life.
Exactly. So, creating safe spaces. In the last few minutes, perhaps that's another whole, maybe that's a webinar or a round table. Creating safe spaces.
What we do, I'm doing a co-facilitating an online anomalous trauma support group. We've been doing them for the past, 8 months maybe now, where we try to create that in a video conferencing format. Where it's really a simple support system where we play by the rules of listening and reflective mirroring and heart-centered communication and learning how, what even that feels like. I think many people, they haven't functioned in that kind of relationship, and it's learning just how to create safety for one another so that we can be supportive, but we can also reflect upon what each other's blind spots are so that we could move past certain, let's say, dysfunctional coping patterns. Because that actually happens in trauma, that's the flip side of trauma, is that we may cope or have addictions or different kinds of behaviors that are unpleasant for other people. And then we're not even aware that we're doing them, or we may not aware that we're being abusive in some ways. So to create a safe place so that we could reflect with one another in a safe sharing and knowing what that is and modeling it for each other. That's helpful. That's very helpful because it's bringing back our humanity, our heart to heart humanity.
And you know, this is again, something that we've tried to encourage, on Wolf Spirit Radio. It always has had the kind of, we're sitting around a fire somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, pull up a log and come and tell your story kind of thing. Or that's how we like to, you know, that's how we feel that it kind of characterizes itself. So Eve, your new books, what are you up to?
Well, I still have, you know, my Dark Side of Cupid. I still, you know, I'm talking about that, and I'm actually working on a project with a colleague to do something in a memoir format, and probably working towards developing therapeutic modalities for anomalous trauma and getting more of that out there through seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work, and, you know, working on that end to develop that. So that's where I'm working at right now. Co-authoring.
I'm sorry, and your website?
My website's evelorgen.com, and it's evelorgen.com. And both my books are on the book menu button on my website, as well as Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can get hard copy and Kindle copies of my book. And they're still very relevant with the whole, you know, love bite, dark side of Cupid, false twin flames scenario that's happening. And it's happening more and more. I mean, it's not an old topic. I'm actually getting more people who are reporting this to me in different ways in which they're experiencing it. So it's a relevant issue that people are starting to discover through what I see a lot of the predatorial types of characters that are actually the predators of this kind of phenomena. And it's starting to come out more and more.
Well, that's a whole other show.
It is. It's another show.
Oh, please. Let's go. Let's talk about that. Yeah. Please.
It's just coming out at the seams.
Tell me all about it.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is, I deserve my twin flame. This whole meme that is like creating a sort of demand for it.
As that puts you into a easily predatable category. I mean, unfortunately, I think people who are in certain programs are more vulnerable to that. But there's also others who seem to be simple victims of, let's say, healers, teachers, and wolves in sheep clothing, mm-hmm. who are actually possessed or hosted people pretending to be healers, but they're really predators on this other level. And so I'm getting a lot of those kind of reports now, and they think they're meeting the twin flame and they're having these dreams, and it's just like a sorcerer doing these mind control things, pulling them into some kind of experimental program.
Weird.
So yeah, that's happening a lot, actually.
So Eve, fantastic. Again, 2 hours, bang, like that.
Yeah.
Lovely. Always lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for the conversation.
And let's talk more about this twin flame. I'm going to gather some data on this because I have a connection to this. Everbeyondradio.com. Come there and, I'm not a predator. I won't have you for lunch. I'm somewhere sort of scraping around the bottom of the food chain with my chickens and my vegetables. Thank you so much, Eve Lorgen.
Thank you.
EveLorgen.com. Go and enjoy that website. Go and buy her books. They're fantastic. So, thank you. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Beyond.